A sellout crowd here for the 200-meter final. Beside me in the booth here is Rose, the speedster hudster.
Thanks, Tom. Louisiana is the odds-on favorite to win the gold.
They're in the blocks.
Ready, set, gold! Well,
they're off. And, wait, did he say ready, set, gold?
He sure did, Tom. It's ready, set, gold from the lottery. You could win up to $200,000. Must be at least 21 to purchase.
That's not the gold medal she's holding.
That's a ready, set, gold ticket.
Pitchers and catchers, well, it's begun. Spring training in the big leagues is underway. We'll get an early season look at the loaded Houston Astros. It is the start of college baseball tomorrow, and it's been 10 years since LSU's won a national championship, and the pressure is mounting. Plus, the NFL, Joe Flacco to Denver, what is that telling you? And where and who is going to pick the Heisman Trophy winner? All these stories and more coming your way. Today, Thursday, Valentine's Day, February the 14th, 2019.
Crabb goes into motion, comes around a screen. Russell, he's got Stauskas on him, then a four to shoot. A pull-up three, and it's good for D'Angelo Russell! 36 for Russell, the All-Star.
Hayward catches, moves to Al Horford trying to calm things down with a three, and he does as he always does.
Good shot there, man. By Al.
A 20-2 run for Detroit to cut it from 28-10, but Al Horford's three calms things for the moment.
Monte goes to the left, throws it to Joker in the paint, leans in, runner, missed it, kept his own miss in with 0.3 seconds to go, and Denver's going to survive the Sacramento Kings.
Exciting moments in the National Basketball Association as teams are winding it down, heading to the All-Star break this year. In Charlotte, North Carolina, the Pelicans will play their last game prior to the break tonight when they host the enigmatic Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Good afternoon. Happy Valentine's Day to you and yours, guys. I sure hope you've taken care of your business. If you haven't, please go take care of your business. Make sure it's a happy, happy household. Please, and do something for the girls in your family, the kids in your family. Absolutely. I did that for my girls, so come on now, do it right. Do it right. CD back in the master control suite. He's spinning the tunes, pushing the buttons in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB, 103.7 The Game. We're here for the next 2 hours, from 2 till 4 p.m. And we've got a plethora of things. Brody Miller will join us in this hour. He covers LSU baseball, did a really nice in-depth article on Paul Menary as he begins his 37th season as a head baseball coach, his 13th season at the helm of LSU. People at Notre Dame said, you're crazy to leave Notre Dame. He had such a thing going there. And he loved it there, but he wanted to see what it was like to coach in the big, big leagues at LSU. And when he first got to LSU, there's a standard that was set there by Skip Bertman that will never, ever, ever be duplicated. Never. He was too good. Right time, right place, perfect storm. Man, he was just sensational. But Paul Menary always has LSU in the hunt. Not only in the SEC, but in the national picture. But it's been a while. 2009, the last national championship for LSU. And the natives are getting restless. No question about it. The fact that there's been a drought there, and they've been close. They've been close several times. In fact, they had great chances three or four other times to dogpile in Omaha after the last game. But through things here and things there, a little misfortune there, and other teams just making the bigger and better plays at the right time, they've fallen short. But the Natives are getting restless. There's no question. Number one recruiting class in the country. You get four really, really good players coming back, two from injuries, two that decided not to go pursue a major league career. They're all back. A very, very, very deep pitching staff. You put it all together, it's got all the makings for a pretty darn good ball club. So we'll delve into that. Really excited about tomorrow. Tomorrow is opening day. And as is the tradition here on the Jordy Helfrich Show, we will get Paul Maneri of the LSU Tigers. And we've got Tony Robichaux of the Raging Cajuns lined up as well to kick things off as the journey begins. And it's a long, long, long journey. But really excited about that. But today, besides Brody Miller, the Astros, you talk about just much like LSU baseball, great expectations for the Houston Astros. And we'll have the Astros here on Delta Media and KLWB and other stations throughout the course of the major league season. Man, they've got four everyday players that could be MVPs. They've got two pitchers that could be Cy Young Award winners. They've got depth at every position. They've got newcomers coming in that are highly, highly regarded as prospects. They're loaded. And they had their first pitching, catching session today. The everyday players will report Monday. And then Tuesday will be the first full squad practice. And then spring ball begins later on this month in West Palm Beach, Florida, the Grapefruit League. How nice. So Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle will chronicle the doings and goings and comings of the Houston Astros, where much is expected. They lost in five games to the Boston Red Sox last season. They were injured and hurt. And we'll see what Alex Bregman and Altuve and Correa and Verlander and Cole and Harris and the rest of this unbelievable squad. What a great story and how they built this roster up. Plus, they almost got one guy that if they had, maybe, just maybe, it would have been back-to-back World Series. So we'll talk to Chandler Rome about that. And then the Schwab will join us as well as we go about the comings and goings in the NFL and this story that's out that says some early talking going about to see if the current commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver, had received some inquiries about jumping ship from the NBA and becoming the commissioner of the NFL. I wonder how Roger Goodell feels about that. There's obviously some owners out there, and I think Jerry Jones might be the linchpin on this whole thing that doesn't want Roger Goodell as the commissioner. And Adam Silver says he hasn't given any thought to NFL inquiries. Tells me he's gotten them. And it tells me as well that interesting times ahead when it comes to that. So we have a busy show planned for you and yours today. So sit back and relax. CD, before we go any further, CD, do you have to take care of any business for tonight? Or are you like some guys I know that you know, don't decide to get a girlfriend until after Valentine's Day?
You know, I'm kind of in that latter position, Jordan. I don't necessarily have to worry about anything from that perspective. I'm good today. In fact, I almost forgot it was Valentine's Day until you said something.
You're good. Okay. Well, you're good. All right. Well, good. I'm glad. But all the guys out there, come on now. Step up. Take care of your business. And we'll take care of some business right now as we go to break. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. We'll be right back.
play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, we're back. 337-706-0111, the phone number to call in case you want to get involved and get a get into the conversation. A little press conference held today. Kenny Chesney, Jason Aldean topped the bill at the upcoming Bayou Country Superfest in Baton Rouge in Tiger Stadium. They did it for a while, then they got away from it. The attendance wasn't so good, and it became an eyesore. They moved it back to New Orleans. Now it's back in again, and this will take place Memorial Weekend, May 25th and 26th. Yes, so let's see. On the 25th, Kenny Chesney, Florida Georgia Line, Dan and Shay, and Cassidy Pope. On Sunday, May 26th, Jason Aldean, Kane Brown, Brett Young, and Chase Rice. So anyway, if you're a country western guy or gal, that's the place to go, the Bayou Country Superfest. It's the 10th anniversary of the festival, and it returns to its original site, Tiger Stadium. And so LSU, because of that, will have a brand new surface to their venerable Tiger Stadium after the concert. They'll lay a whole new sod on there and let it rip. You know you've arrived when your ticket price, you're selling out games and your secondary market's going through the roof. And there's a lot of games left to be played before LSU meets Tennessee. Tennessee was a winner again last night. They are 12-0 in the SEC. They beat South Carolina, or 11-0, excuse me, and LSU is 10-1, one game behind them. LSU has announced that the game between LSU and Tennessee on February the 23rd, which is a Saturday, it's 11 o'clock tip, early tip. It's a television game. That's just the way it works. But according to the LSU Tickets Twitter account, the game has been sold out since January 31st. And the prices for tickets on reselling websites like StubHub, which is LSU's preferred secondary ticket dealer, they're getting pretty up there. As of 1 o'clock this afternoon, the cheapest ticket available is at $74.95, and that's for a 300-level seat. That's up in the rafters. Other seats among the rafters are between $75 and $237. Seats at the 200 level listed between $156 and $474. And then you get down to the low section, close to the court, you're going to have to shell out $280 to a ticket, to as high as $902 for a ticket, depending upon the location. How about that? Yes, indeed. LSU students have to register for seats beforehand as well. The last time students had to register for a men's basketball ticket was January 3rd, 2018, and that game, of course, was against Kentucky. So there's a high demand. It's an 11 o'clock tip Saturday, February 23rd. In the meantime, LSU's got to take care of business against Georgia this Saturday. My buddy Jay Billis, who is the lead analyst for ESPN, came out with his Billis Index today, listing the top 68 teams in college basketball. And he's got tiers. Tier 1, Final Four teams. Teams that have a legitimate shot, a really great shot of getting to the Final Four. And as expected, you could tell. I mean, Duke is one of those teams. There's no doubting their ability. And with their 23-point second-half comeback on the road against Louisville is a testament to that. So he's got five teams on Tier 1. Tennessee, those are national championship favorites. Not only is it Duke, but it's Tennessee. You've got the Virginia Cavaliers in there, the Gonzaga Bulldogs, and he's even got the Kentucky Wildcats. And he says, don't be too concerned about the loss to LSU. Kentucky is looking more like the team that was ranked number one before the season. Then he's got tier two, the Final Four contenders. And this is a list of teams that can reach a Final Four, and it's a little bit longer. He's got Michigan State in there, Michigan in there, the North Carolina Tar Heels in there, the Marquette Golden Eagles with their superstar Marcus Howard, a team that LSU lost to and lost to closely, the Houston Cougars. They're 23-1. They shoot the three ball like crazy. And Kelvin Sampson has likened this team to his 2002 Oklahoma team that reached the Final Four in Atlanta. You've got a former LSU assistant coach, and Eric Musselman, and his Nevada Wolfpack are a Tier 2 team at 23-1. The surprising team in there, the Buffalo Bulls, another team with only three losses. And then the last team that he has listed in his Tier 2 level, Final Four contenders, are the LSU Tigers. Quote, the Bayou Bengals have legitimate talent and can really get offensive rebounds. What will hold LSU back from being among the very best teams is defensive rebounding and perimeter shooting. Tremont Waters is one of the best guards in the country and one of the very best little guards around. He's got LSU in the top 13. That's a top three seed. So that's pretty good. And there is a buzz around this city. There's a buzz around the basketball community. It's so good to hear people say, well, football's over. We can't wait for baseball to start. The baseball fans will always be there. It's the number one college baseball attendance mark setter for the past 24 years. No one gets more people to watch a baseball game than LSU and their fans. But, man, it's great to have LSU basketball relevant again. And I think that has always been the goal and Joe Oliva's purpose as the athletic director. Why can't every team at this university be in the national relevancy for championships? They've got every bit of every facility you could ever imagine and then some. Everybody has the best of the best. They just do. And therefore, LSU competing at a very high level in basketball is sensational. So, man, I love it. Beth Tarina's softball team, as CD mentioned in his opening diatribe, they win again. They beat 20th-ranked Oklahoma State 3-1. They're in the St. Pete Clearwater Elite Invitational. They open up their season, I mean, just destroying people. Tulsa and Iowa and Bucknell, they just, you know, only had to go five innings in each one of those games. They run-ruled them all. Now they step up in competition. They just beat 20th-ranked Oklahoma State. Tomorrow they'll take on 19th-ranked Oregon and then 11th-ranked Texas. And then on Saturday, they'll play Ohio State, and then the number one ranked team in the country, Florida State. So we'll have a whole new idea about this LSU softball team. But so far, so very, very good. So that's something else to think about. So ticket prices going up, games being sold out. LSU's just got to take care of their business leading up to that game. You know, they're on the road again. Then they've got three home games. And I don't know what to hope for. I guess I'm hoping for Kentucky to beat Tennessee this Saturday. That would put LSU and Tennessee in a first-place tie. If they both take care of their business and LSU takes care of Tennessee here on that 23rd day of February, then LSU would be in sole possession of first place. Or would you rather Tennessee continue to win and LSU to beat the number one ranked team in the country? No. You want to take the lead in the SEC. So I hope Kentucky beats beats Tennessee this Saturday. It's not an easy task, but it can be done. There's no question it can be done. We'll see how Kentucky bounces back, and we'll see how LSU handles this notoriety. They've never been this highly ranked. They've never had this much public affection coming their way. I promise you, the players are getting pats on the back everywhere they go. But this is a, look, and I've always asked this question. And what I love about this LSU basketball team is they have a variety of ways that they can play and a variety of things that they can do. But what sets them apart is their backcourt. They've got three legitimate point guards. Now, they don't all play the point because Tremont Waters is just too good. But sometimes he can give the ball to Javonte Smart, and Smart can bring the ball up the court and set up the offense. I'm always asked, would you rather have great bigs or a great backcourt? And in college basketball, give me the great backcourt every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Because without the great backcourt, the bigs don't touch the ball. They don't get it. Now you gotta have both. You gotta have some decent bigs to win at the elite level. But if you don't have great guards, you can't. You just cannot. And I think LSU has three dynamic guards that set them apart from many, many others. Trey Waters, Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, they can all handle it. If they can consistently knock down shots from the perimeter, look out. Look out. It's a very, very dangerous team. Much more on the matchup between LSU and Georgia tomorrow. We're going to spend some time talking baseball. And why not? Why not? Always great expectations. Always Omaha or bust. If you don't win a national championship, it's not. I don't know if that's fair or not, but that's what LSU fans feel. Sometimes it's a little bit of grandiosity on their part, but it is what it is. And there's a lot of pressure on Paul Maneri and this LSU baseball team this season, ranked number one or number two across the board in the country. Number one recruiting class. They've got depth. They've got size. They've got power. They've got speed. They've got defense. They've got it all. But can they put it all together and get good when you need to be good and be great when you need to be great? Well, we'll talk LSU baseball next. Brody Miller will cover them for NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, all season long. And don't forget tomorrow, the head skippers, Paul Maneri, the Tigers, Tony Robichaux, the Cajuns, on opening day. We'll be right back on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
College baseball time, and that means, I guess there's no other program where the expectations are more expected than when it comes to LSU baseball. They are expected to be a national title contender each and every year. Expected. LSU football fans want LSU to be a national championship contender every year. LSU basketball fans are just reveling in what's going on right here, right now, but it's not been the expectations year in and year out. Brody Miller from NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, will be covering this LSU baseball team from start to finish, and we hope the finish is a dog pile in Omaha, Nebraska. Brody, good day, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's beautiful out here in Baton Rouge. How are you doing?
It's a beautiful day. It's baseball weather. You had a great in-depth story on Paul Maneri. There's not a better media savvy coach and more amicable and more available to the media than Paul Maneri, is there?
Oh, it's the absolute truth. I understand I'm young, haven't been around too many, but I've been around the Big Ten. I've been around a few different SEC schools. I mean, there's nobody that's come close to Pulmonary in the media sense. The only person I can think of that maybe is in the same realm as Tom Izzo at Michigan State. But, I mean, it's pretty – he basically will sit down with anyone anytime they ask.
It is remarkable. And what caught me is a couple of things. One, his memory. I mean, he can probably remember – What the temperature was, how many clouds were in the sky, and when certain plays took place that were either really, really good plays that helped him or devastating plays that helped them avoid the ultimate goal of winning a championship.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I actually did a story back in, I want to say, late May last year that was basically entirely about that memory because it makes our job as reporters kind of easy because we'll do the research for us half the time. And I'll do a fact check him, and it's insane. He will break down every single pitch and play of a game in 2012, and I'll go back and look at it. And everything except maybe like one or two pitches is on the money. I mean, it's pretty impressive. But I think, like you were saying, I think that can also be kind of a torturous trait because. You know, he remembers everything, and that means these last 9 years there have been a lot of heartbreaking losses and a lot of you know, great teams that fell just short because of a bad call or an unlucky break or just things going just a little wrong. And I think that eats at him a little bit because he does remember each one of those things, and that's part of how he practices. The way he practices is he thinks about every little thing that's ever gone wrong in one of his programs, and he's going to practice to make sure every little one of those details is fixed during practice so it doesn't become a problem in June.
He's got one national championship, 2009. I really believe in his heart of hearts he thinks he could have very easily have three or four national championships if for a break here or a break there. But that's got to be tough to swallow.
It does. And I think, I think 2013 hurts because that team, you can make an argument that 2013 team was maybe his best team. I mean, that team was loaded, young Bregman, young Nola. They broke the single season wins record, and they go 2-0. I mean, I think going 2-0 also just really breaks his heart because that's the only time that he's ever gone 2-0 at LSU. It's the second time in his career he's done that. And I just think that the optics of that really sting. And then 2017, though, there's no doubt in anyone's mind that's around close to Pulmonary that 2017 hurts more than the most. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, one, just how good that team was. Two, all those guys coming back. You know, your Dykeman, Robertson's, all those guys. Poche's come back. Mm-hmm. But also just the way it happened, like you talked about. I mean, there was the Eric Walker going down. There's Josh Smith being called out at second base when he was probably safe. They had replay back then. There's the Jake Slaughter slide at second base that cost them the game-tying run. And there's Kramer Roberts getting thrown out of home plate. Yeah. It's a long list of small ways that one got away from him.
I mean, do you see some comparisons? I mean, that was a team that surprised Pulmonary and that players came back, didn't opt to go to the pro ranks. Same thing happens this year. He gets his outfield back. He gets Walker back off of injury, Josh Smith back off of injury. So it's kind of like you get a great recruiting class and then you get even better players coming back who've been through your system. I see a lot of, as Yogi would say, deja vu here.
It's almost like and I don't mean to say it's like these two teams combined, but it's almost like a mesh of what made that 2017 team work and what made the 2009 team work. Because 2009 was the number one recruiting class in the country that year, and that's the only other time he's had that. And I think so that was that just loaded freshman class on 2009 team that helped propel them. But 2017, like you said, was all those returning guys coming back. Right now, this 2019 team has the clear number one recruiting class in the country, and also, you know, have Watson, Duplantis, Hess, Walker, Smith, all those guys coming back with experience. So it is kind of a mesh of those two dynamics. And, yeah, I mean, I think – and I asked them, I'm not asking you to predict the championship, but what traits are you seeing in this team that just make you optimistic? And aside from the talent, of course. And he said, I really just like – there's an unusual chemistry about this team already. There's – you know, you have a good mix of older guys who actually want to help younger guys, and you have leaders, and then you also have young guys who – and it's true. I mean, I talked to most of them, and they don't really have a sense of ego about them, not at least in a healthy way they do, but, like, they actually – those freshmen, they actually care about winning here, and they actually – they want to learn from the older guys, which is something Palmieri said. So I think there's a good chemistry about this team that makes them optimistic that they can actually make good on all this talent.
Bernie Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. LSU baseball begins on Friday, season opener. The ULM Warhawks come to town. It's Military Appreciation Weekend. There'll be baseball games throughout the day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and even Monday at the box. You know, Palmieri said, look, this LSU baseball program built by Skip Bertman, maintained by Palmieri, I mean, he's won 4 SEC titles, 6 SEC tournament titles, been to 5 College World Series, a 6th when he was at Notre Dame. And yet people are restless. I vividly remember hearing about when LSU beat Kentucky in basketball the other day, the Kentucky fans just adamant that it was John Calipari's fault. He can't coach. And here's a guy that won a national championship that always has Kentucky in the hunt. I sense the same about Palmieri. I mean, there's pressure to win and win big this year in my estimation of what I'm hearing from people.
No, I definitely agree there's some of that. And, you know, it's always tricky trying to tell how much of that kind of unrest is just the noisiest people or if it's actually a lot of people. You know,
yeah,
it's always a tough thing to figure out. I don't know the answer to it. It's my first full season, so I'll get a better gauge of it, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, I get it. I hear it in my mentions and in my comment sections, all those things about Palmieri, you know, can't win and all these things and all the second-guessing every little mistake he's ever made. And I just think that's a little – be careful what you wish for, you know. I mean,
right.
He is one of the most consistent coaches in the country. He does have these teams that are clearly good enough. I mean, I don't know what more you could really want. I mean, Skip Bertman, I guess. I guess Skip Bertman's numbers would be what you'd want. But I think, yeah, I definitely agree there's some pressure in this. And he'll tell you that. He'll say – it's LSU where you are supposed to go to Omaha and you are expected to win the championship every few years, and it's a lot to ask, but at the same time I don't think the criticism is always fair is what I would say.
Very well put. Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. We all can talk about the everyday players and they're loaded just about at every position, but it always comes down to the pitching staff. And what have you seen out of this staff? Because they've made a big investment in this. They've got a lot of pitchers on this squad this year.
Oh, it's astounding how much talent they have. I mean, I don't think I'm exaggerating if I say that those three top freshmen they have right now in Landon Marceau, Jaden Hill, and Cole Henry, I feel pretty confident saying all of them would have been, I don't know, the second best pitcher on last year's team probably. Maybe, you know, one can make an argument Landon Marceau would have been the best pitcher on last year's team.
Wow.
And obviously they have to prove it in a game setting, but they have that kind of talent. There's no doubt about it. And the truth is, I mean, then you got Chase Costello, who's just not far behind those guys. And then, I mean, there's just so many names on this pitching staff that would have been essential pieces on some of the best LSU teams. Now we'll see if they put it together. But the truth is, Palmieri is most as I mean, I asked him about it, asked Nolan Cain about it, asked a lot of people who've covered this team in the past. Has Palmieri ever had a staff that even comes as close to as deep as this one? And the answer is not even close. I mean,
really,
there have been, you know, staffs with maybe more top heavy talent or ones that are pretty deep without as much top heavy talent. This staff, I mean, they could arguably have 14 guys that they legitimately trust to put out there. You have probably 8 guys you are excited to put out there. You know, it's kind of crazy that a guy like Mikhail Hilliard, and granted that's a complicated situation for a lot of reasons, but he's somebody who was their best starting pitcher last year and had a 3.6 ERA off the top of my head, was the most reliable guy by far. He's going to be a bullpen guy this year, you know? And some of those star freshmen I'm talking about, they're going to be midweek guys. Jaden Hill and Cole Henry are probably going to be coming out of the midweek. So I just think there's so much depth there that even if anyone's struggling, you can turn to another guy in any second. So I think that's something that they're going to rely on.
Is this deep enough early on where you do not have to tax the arms of a Zach Hess and of an Eric Walker, where you can let them go 3, 4, 5 innings maybe and then have confidence to bring somebody else in, and then you've got your closer in Todd Peterson? Is that, do you think, the approach that Alan Dunn and Palmieri are going to take this season?
You know, I won't go as far as saying that's going to be their approach, but I will definitely go as far as saying that is something they can do.
Okay.
And that's going to be – and by the way, just to, you know, listeners, that's going to be the plan tomorrow night. That Dak Hass is still a little behind with his recovery from a small groin issue, so he's not going to go more than 4 or 5 innings tomorrow night for sure.
Okay.
And we're already going to get our first taste of what that bullpen looks like, because, like you said, you have Todd Peterson as your closer. He's the guy who can give you one inning for sure and can go longer. He's a starter naturally, so he can give you the 8-9 innings. Then you got Devin Fontenot, I would say their most reliable pitcher, most reliable reliever of the postseason. He's a guy who can be your setup guy. He can be a mid-relief guy. You know, you got Matthew Beck, who's somebody who's very up and down, but he's talented. You know, that's another veteran who has good stuff. That's three veterans right there you can trust. And then you're going to have, you know, you can put Mikhail Hilliard in that bullpen now. You can put your Rye Gunters and Riggs Threadgill, these pretty highly thought of freshmen who just aren't going to crack the starting rotation. Chase Costello. That's 6-7 guys right there who are reliable relievers they believe they can trust in those situations. So the idea of going, you know, not having to tax arms is something that's probably very appealing to Alan Dunn.
Palmieri has said, we're not going to talk about Omaha ever again. We're just going to take it one game at a time. I personally like the approach. I think everybody knows exactly what the goal is. The players don't need to talk about it anymore. But that one-game-by-one-game approach, I like that. I like that, Stan. I think that's a recipe for success.
I dropped a little joke in that story that we'll see if Palmieri adheres to that rule, because I think he'll probably drop comments. But yeah, I think it's a good rule. And one thing that story tried to drive home is that at first I kind of roll my eyes at some of those. You know, we all roll our eyes at coach speak sometimes, and day by day, one game at a time, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I actually do believe that that's something Palmieri really does succeed. And the evidence is in the fact that every year it's like clockwork. His teams play their best baseball in May. And it's bizarre. Even last year, team was not a very good team. Mm-hmm. And they still somehow went on a crazy SEC tournament run. You know, they made it to the regional finals. That was not supposed to happen. There was a chance they weren't even going to make the NCAA tournament. So I just think he really is good at preaching that and really good at making teams that buy into, you know, if we focus on one thing at a time, Omaha will one day be there. So I think it's a good rule to set, because the proof is in the pudding for him. But I think sometimes these things come naturally, and we will be hearing about Omaha. I can assure you that.
I'm betting the over on that one. Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times Pick You. Paul's always been one that tinkers with this, that, and the other. And well, that lineup that you see the opening weekends, very rarely the lineup you see come the start of SEC play. But I got a funny feeling that he really likes his lineup. I don't know where there's going to be a change here or there.
Are you talking about in the on-the-field lineup?
Yes.
I'm with you for the most part. I think first base, you know, I think it's going to be Drew Bianco at first base, but I do think that will be a kind of revolving spot. I think, you know, I think when you have four freshmen, you're okay with there. I think you'll see him, especially early in the season, you'll see him experiment some. You know, you might see some C.J. Willis or Cade Beloso or Gavin Dugas there. I think the only other one worth even remotely keeping an eye on is Hal Hughes at third base. I wouldn't bet on that. I think Drew Bianco is the only other person who might compete there, and he's just too far behind defensively. But that's the only one that's possible you keep an eye on, is, you know, Hal Hughes is a great defender. And Palmieri actually kind of opened up last week that some of his biggest regrets have been focusing too much on what he thinks a great middle infield can be and getting away from just having your best defender at third base. I think he's learned that the hard way a few different years. So I think he's really likes the idea of just having Hal Hughes at third and accepting whatever he is on offense. But that's the only other one worth watching. And then one other I might mention is, I'm curious how they get creative to try to get Giovanni DiGiacomo on the field, because they love him. They think he's somebody. I think he would have been the starting center fielder if Watson or Duplantis went pro. I think they're really high on him, but their outfield is just so loaded that right now he's the fourth guy.
Don't be surprised, Brody, if all of a sudden Daniel Cabrera moves from outfield to first base. I'm just telling you.
I know. One day I was at practice, and we did see it for a few minutes. We saw Cabrera taking balls at first base. I think it would make sense in a lot of ways. You know, the people I talked to in the program, they said they tried it once and haven't tried it again since. But it's worth keeping an eye on, because, you know, the goal at the end of the day is get the best nine guys on the field. And, I mean, the best nine guys on the field might be Cabrera at first base and DiGiacomo in left field.
We'll see. Plenty of baseball to get it all straightened out before league play starts. But Brody Miller will be covering this ball club, and with the unusual chemistry that they've got already and the great talent and the great expectations, should be a fun, fun season that gets underway on Friday against UL Monroe. Brody, thanks so much, baby, and get ready for some long days at the box, all right?
I'm excited for it. Have a good one. Thank you.
All right, you too. Brody Miller, we'll look forward to talking to him throughout the course of the college baseball season. Always enthusiastic, always does a great job. Great expectations, really is. Been 10 years, 10 long years. LSU's due. Maybe this is the year. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helpert Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfer Show on 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. As mentioned earlier in the program, the LSU Tigers softball team, headed by head coach Beth Tarina, in St. Pete, Clearwater, for the Elite Invitational, improved their record to 7-0 with a 3-1 win over the 20th-ranked Oklahoma State softball club. Beth Tarina, kind enough to join us from Eddie C. Moore Complex in Clearwater. Beth, congratulations on yet another win. I guess a win is great, but you won being challenged really significantly for the first time all season long. Tell us about the game today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was exciting. It was nice to see our kids against some, you know, really tough competition. Oklahoma State's a really solid team, and it was nice to see them, you know, play from behind and be able to respond. And there were a lot of good things about the game. I was happy for our team.
Kind of a nip-and-tuck, nail-biter thing. Who was the stars of the game today?
Well, we had another Shelby show. That's what we're calling it, Shelby Wickersham and Shelby Sinceri. It's the Shelby show, so... They were awesome. You know, Shelby Sinceri just doing it at the plate and on the mound for us. It's really amazing, the start of the season that she's had. But, you know, I think the big moment is that home run that she hit there to put us up. So, and then was able to come in and close out the game on the mound. She's just a great player, deserves every bit of success that she has. She works so hard to be what she is and just is a good human being. You know, it's hard not to pull for a kid like that. And then she goes out and does that. So, and then Shelby Wickersham, just a freshman, you know, in her second start, and was awesome for us, really set the tone and did a great job keeping us in it so we were able to score.
Shelby, of course, dad, Seth Wickersham, played quarterback for the LSU Tigers back in the day. This is really an elite tournament. You've got Oklahoma State, Oregon, Texas, Ohio State, and the number one ranked team in the country right now in Florida State. This is a great litmus test for your club early on in the season.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, a lot of people have talked about it being a measuring stick or a barometer, but I find it to be a really just great opportunity for our team. It's kind of a great opportunity to let some kids get their feet wet, for, you know, some of these freshmen to get out there and just for us to really understand what type of team we're going to be, what we're made of. So I think it's just really a great opportunity to see a lot of things and learn a lot of things about our team.
What do you do now? You don't play again till Friday at 11:30. Is it scouting time? Is it get off your feet time? What time is it now for this softball team that's 7-0?
Well, the coaches are definitely in scouting time, but the team, you know, Leah Andrews is from here, so the team is spending some time at her family's house this afternoon.
Nice.
So I'm sure they're learning all about her and her family photos and pictures of her as a kid. You know, so they're enjoying some time with her family since we're, you know, right here in her hometown today.
It's been a terrific start. You really like this club, don't you? They're really, they've got some good things about them, I think.
They do. Our position players are just so solid, it seems, you know, up and down our lineup. And when you look at them defensively, they're really veteran. And they just keep it together. They play intelligently. You know, they make good decisions, good choices out there on the field. So it's fun watching those guys. And then, you know, I'm still learning the freshmen. I'm still learning the pitching staff. I think today was a really good learning experience for me as a coach, just understanding what works for Shelby Wickersham, what works do I need to tell her, what things do I need to do to help her be better. So good learning experience for us with this young pitching staff.
Well, go back to scouting. Short notice, but we had to get you to congratulate you. 3-1 winners today over 20th-ranked Oklahoma State. Tomorrow, 11:30 Central Time, first pitch, number 19, Oregon. Another really good test for you. Best of luck, and thank you for the time, Beth.
Oh, you got it. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me, and I appreciate the attention. It means a lot to us, so thank you.
You deserve it. You deserve it. All right. Well, Paul Maneri won't say Omaha, but the goal every year for LSU softball is Oklahoma City, and they'll play Oklahoma. They just beat Oklahoma State. So we appreciate her time as we wrap up hour number one. A busy hour number two coming your way. We'll tell you about that next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana's sports station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go. Happy Valentine's Day to you and yours this Thursday, February 14th. The year is 2019. School zones are in effect. Kids are out and about. And guys, if you haven't taken care of your business, take care of your business, because it's almost quitting time, and you need to take care of your business before you get home to that significant other. I'm just saying, take care of your business. Busy second hour planned for you and yours. You heard CD talk about pitchers and catchers have reported. The Houston Astros are trying to get back for the third straight year and win the American League Championship Series, get to the World Series. They're trying. They're in Florida for the Grapefruit League. We'll get a report from Chandler Rome of the Houston Chronicle coming up here shortly. And then the Schwab, there is an unusual amount of have the amount of quarterbacks, the supply of quarterbacks, succeeded the demand? And what does the Joe Flacco deal mean? Now, we'll talk to the Schwab about that. But without further ado, as we do each and every day at this time of day, it's time to take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CB, button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, the Pelicans have one more game before the All-Star break. All the great players will convene in Charlotte for the festivities this weekend. We've got baseball starting up, and away we go. CD, good afternoon, sir.
And what's going on, Jordy?
Valentine's Day. It's a beautiful day.
It is a nice day, actually, outside.
Good.
It's not bad. It's not bad, Jordy. But you're talking about the Pels. I think we should just send Anthony Davis out on an all-expenses-paid trip to Charlotte, North Carolina, before the All-Star break, just to kind of tell him, hey, like, just get warmed up for that.
I love how he says, you know, you just heard Alvin Gentry talking that.
Yeah.
Anthony wants to play, so we'll play him. What if Anthony wants to jump to the moon? Are we going to go ahead and jump to the – I mean, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
It is just getting ridiculous, everything that's going on with the Pelicans, and it kind of shows how maybe the NBA isn't necessarily the best league in the world. Mind you, I think there's a lot of positives that have gone on since Adam Silver has been named the commissioner of the NBA. We're seeing a lot more transparency with certain things. Mind you, I think this might be one of those blemishes on the resume of one Adam Silver. You agree with that?
Kind of, sort of. I mean, maybe Adam Silver's been not paying attention to this. Maybe he's paying attention to the overtures from NFL owners trying to get him to run their league. I don't know.
I was about to get right there. Jordy kind of stole my thunder there a little bit. But Adam Silver being potentially pegged as the potential next commissioner of the NFL, you look what he's done. We talked about it just now, the transparency of the league and their social media policies being a lot more lax, allowing fans to show highlights as well to get people more informed about what's going on in the game. So I feel like maybe Adam Silver could wind up heading his way to the NFL. He said he hasn't heard any offers yet, but he knows probably those footsteps are coming, and I think the NFL could wind up using him, honestly. Get rid of Roger Goodell, and you put anybody there, you'd probably be in a better spot.
Yeah, we'll see. Goodell, I mean, he's getting $44 million a year, but even he has feelings. I can't believe this is sitting well with him. But anyway, move on. We'll see. Long way from that.
Exactly, Jordy. But we're not too far away from the Underwear Olympics, Jordy, and one former LaTeX. The Underwear Olympics, the Draft Combine.
Oh, okay, I got you.
It's one of the other names for it, Jordy. The Underwear Olympics, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, so you have
I'm with you.
Former La Tech defensive end Jalen Ferguson. He is not going to be able to participate in the Combine due to some stuff that's happened off the field with him. And it feels like I wound up seeing this article on Pro Football Talk saying that they've bungled this scouting combine ban. You agree with that, Jordy, with what's going on with him? And also more recently, Joe Mixon.
Yeah, I mean, due diligence always comes into play. Why do they only invite certain people to the combine? Why don't they just open it up and turn them all loose? Let them all participate. Open it up. I don't know why you have to just let a certain amount of people in there. If you never know who's going to come out and shine and star. I mean, heck, you don't have to pay their way, but if they want to go, let them go. I don't know. I don't get it.
I think it's just more because of the fact if you invite everybody that's draft eligible, that winds up making it a bit of a cluster because you got to realize like that's probably, let's say, a rough estimate of the draft eligible players in this year's draft are about 500. Let's go with that. Yeah, 500 people all
turn them loose.
It just feels like it's too much going on, Jordy. That's why I like how they have these pro days as well. To give the guys who didn't get those invites to the combines, I believe, in Indianapolis, it gives them a bit more of a chance to shine. Mind you, it's a smaller stage, but it's still you give them a shot to shine, especially LSU players, even Cajuns players. Not all the Cajuns players are going to wind up getting an invite.
I know. Well, why don't we have two or three sites and have it on two or three different weekends and invite your top-tier players to one, then your secondary-tier players on another, and so forth and so on. Turn them all loose. The NFL's got more money. That doesn't matter to them. That's not going to cost. And the coaches, that's what they love to do. They love to go watch, and you may find a diamond in the rough. You never know.
Jordy Holtberg for NFL Commissioner 2020, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
I like that.
You
I like
got
to
pay me $20 million. Just $20 million. That's
20,
all.
Just $20
million?
I'm a bargain. Yeah, and that's going to make the NFL a lot more money, so why not go Jordy Holtberg, Commissioner 2020. Let's just go with that. And now we got to kind of hop over to some college football, Jordy. You saw this pop up last night. Todd Grantham, he's going to be sticking around at Florida.
Yes.
And it got me thinking, has Dave Aranda set the standard when it comes to colleges trying to keep their guys in-house, especially guys that are extremely knowledgeable in their craft?
Oh, well, he certainly set the standard from a dollar figure. I don't know how much NFL owners are willing to pay defensive coordinators these days. I'd have to look that up, but... he's certainly at the top of the list whenever you mention simply because he's paid the most, and that's what people value and people judge by. So it's going to take an awful lot to get him. It just depends on what Dave Aranda really, really wants. I'm glad he's here. Hope he stays around a long time.
Exactly, Jordy.
Wasn't Grantham interviewing with the Bengals?
Yeah, he's interviewing with the Bengals.
Who wants to go there? God, the Browns are better than the Bengals.
I'm sure he probably got offered some from over in Cleveland while he was in Ohio.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but Florida seems a lot more secure with Dan Mullen than the Cincinnati Bengals.
I'd have to agree with you, Jordy. I mean, yeah, the Cincinnati Bengals, they're changing pretty much everything. You have the head coach should have been gone years ago, but now he's out the door. Yeah. It's a whole new era. And Dan Mullen, everything seems to be secure for him for quite some time. And last one for you, Jordy, on this Valentine's Day. Might as well wrap it up on that kind of note, Jordy. Favorite romantic movie of all time, Jordy?
I'm going to be a sentimental fool here. I think The Notebook is pretty darn good. You ever see The Notebook? It's a tearjerker.
I've never seen it, Jordy.
Oh, come on. Rachel McAdams, Ryan Gosling, who else is in it? The Maverick, James Garner. Oh, it's a good one. Try it. Google it. find it, you'll like it.
I've heard enough about it, Jordy, to kind of get the gist of it for what it's worth. But, yeah, James Garner, I heard he wasn't half bad in that.
No, he's very, very good. And Rachel McAdams, she's one of my favorites. She's really, really good. Anyway, that's it. What about you? You got one?
High Fidelity, Jordy, with John Cusack. It came out like about year 2000. It's about this dude owns a record shop.
I remember
it. That is just a really good. It's a really good movie, and the soundtrack for it is phenomenal.
There you go. All right, that's CD, and that's your Hot Topics for the day. Brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce every day. The B. Art family making it happen for nearly 90 years. The finest spices, the finest peppers. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. We'll take a timeout. We'll head out to Florida. Astros, pitchers and catchers getting it done. We'll get a report next.
Them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back, ladies and gentlemen. Boy, I tell you what. Can you smell it? Yes, it's baseball time. West Palm Beach, Florida. The Houston Astros pitchers and catchers work out for the first time today. Position players slated to report on Monday. The first full squad workout is Tuesday. And the Astros open Grapefruit League play on February 23rd against the Nationals at the ballpark of the Palm Beaches. Doesn't that just sound great? And Chandler Rome, who's a beat writer for the Houston Astros, for the Houston Chronicle, kind enough to join us. Used to have ties down here in Baton Rouge. Now he's moved up to the big leagues, literally. Chandler, happy spring training to you. How are you?
Happy spring training, Jordy. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing terrific. Are we? Neither one of us is doing as well as Garrett Cole's doing, are we?
No. Garrett Cole got a record arbitration settlement yesterday. Really, it was a record day for a lot of people yesterday in the arbitration world. Both he and Trevor Bauer got salaries of $13 million or more. Garrett Cole's $13.5 million salary was the largest ever awarded to a player out of an arbitration hearing. And, you know, Cole spoke today. It's kind of the business side of the game. You go to these arbitration hearings and, you know, there's a side for the players that argue that they should make this amount of money, and then there's members of the team's front office that are there that, quite frankly, they're there to discredit the player a little bit, to say, here's why we don't think you're worth that much money, but here's why we think you're worth this much money. So it's a little bit of an awkward situation, but Garrett Cole said that yesterday everything was civil. Obviously, there were some things said that, you know, maybe Cole didn't like, but he said everything was civil and he understood where the Astros were coming from in their part of the hearing. But he was very happy to win, and he'll be making $13.5 million this season.
Good for Garrett Cole. I'm all for the players on that. And speaking of players, General Manager Jeff Lanneau came out and said that the Astros have four position players that could be an MVP this year, two pitchers that could be Cy Young Award winners. That's a pretty good starting point for a baseball team.
Yeah, the Astros are on paper. We said this last year too, and that's kind of cautioned you to how fickle this sport is. But I think last year and this year, you could make an argument that on paper these teams may be a little bit better than that club in 2017 that won the World Series. Mm-hmm. You know, they returned the entire core of their lineup. Now the real key is going to be, and the key to probably we won't see fully until position players report later on this week, is that core healthy? You know, all four of those guys you mentioned, Bregman, Springer, Correa, and Altuve, all dealt with some sort of injury either in the off season or at the latter part of last season. So ensuring that all those guys are healthy and ready to go and can stay healthy for the whole year, that's probably atop the Astros' list of concerns this spring and getting into the season?
Chandler Rome talking Houston Astros, right, for the Houston Chronicle. It's a loaded roster, but there's got to be some camp battles out there, right? You got to fill a roster up. You've got four starting pitchers. I guess that fifth spot is open right now?
That is the competition in spring training. There's another one for that last spot on the bench. There's going to be a roster crunch, and, you know, guys like Jake Marisnyk and Tony Kemp, both of whom are out of options. That'll be a battle before that last bench spot. Like you mentioned, the battle for the fifth starter in the rotation is going to be the one that dominates spring training. You know, Josh James came up last year and did really, really well. He made both the Astros playoff rosters. He can throw 100 miles an hour. He's getting feel for his changeup. He's getting a feel for some of his breaking stuff. You've got a left-hander in Framber Valdez who threw a bullpen today and looked really well and looked really good. He's more of a curveball-centric guy, but his command's not there yet, not as maybe proficient as they'd like to see. And then you've got a veteran in Brad Peacock who started for most of his career and kind of carved a niche in the Astros bullpen last year, but he's in contention for that fifth spot as well. So a veteran guy in Peacock that's done it before, and then two kind of up-and-coming prospects. Those are probably the three, you know, most legitimate candidates right now. There are other guys on the outside looking in like Cionel Perez and Brady Rogers, guys that could maybe inch their way into the competition. But, you know, as we sit here on the first day of pitchers and catchers working out, I'd say those three guys, Peacock, Valdez, and Josh James, are probably the three most legitimate candidates to fill out the rotation.
I guess this is the time, not only are they the Astros loaded at the major league level, but those in the farm club system, this is their opportunity to be seen and to perform. So I guess that's a major part of this spring training ordeal as well.
Yeah, they've got some really highly touted non-roster invitees here. They've got Forrest Whitley, who is who is the best pitching prospect in baseball, not just in the Astros system. Forrest Whitley is the best pitching prospect in baseball. And he didn't throw a bullpen today. He'll probably throw one tomorrow. Corbin Martin, a guy that went to Texas A&M that faced LSU quite a bit in his career.
Yeah.
Corbin Martin, he's the number five prospect in the system. He threw a bullpen today. He's among the non-roster invitees. So is J.B. Bukauskas, who was the first-round pick a couple of years ago. So there's a lot of very young pitchers that are getting their first taste of Major League spring training this year. And, you know, I don't think that the Astros expect any of those guys to make the club, to break spring training with the team. But there is wide expectation that you will definitely see Forrest Whitley, Corbin Martin, and J.B. Bukauskas in the major leagues at some point this year, barring injury.
He is Chandler Rome, the Houston Chronicle. Spring training pitchers and catchers have reported, and they threw today. The everyday players report on Monday. The Astros lost in five games in the AL Championship Series to the Red Sox, and you mentioned how Altuve basically playing with a broken kneecap. Correa had a bad back. Bregman had that bum elbow. Lance McCullers, that torn ulnar collateral ligament. He's going to miss this entire season. It's a very close-knit team, I have heard. What sense do you get about their hunger for this season?
I think it's kind of understood when you walk into the clubhouse. I mean, this team doesn't shy away from expectations. They know they're good, and they know that they have one of the best rosters in baseball, and they know that, quite frankly, they're favored to run through the division. This is a division where, you know, the A's were probably the biggest surprise in baseball last year that they hung around and made it tough on the Astros. But other than that, you know, the Mariners have really torn down in the offseason. The Angels are going to be better this year, but I don't think they're going to be anywhere near contention. And then the Rangers are also in a rebuilding phase. So this is a team that on paper, you know, barring a catastrophic run of injuries, should run through the AL West without much, you know, pressure
opposition
applied to them.
Yeah.
And so they're aware of that, and they accept it and they welcome it. But it's certainly one of those things, though, that, you know, this is Major League Baseball. They're not just going to run out there, roll the balls out, and they're going to win. They've got to have guys perform at a high level. And as you saw last year, you know, in the second half of the year and toward the playoffs, you know, this offense really regressed a little bit.
Yes.
And a lot of it had to do with guys being hurt, but a lot of it also had to do with guys just flat out not performing. I mean, Marwin Gonzalez, he's a free agent now, and he won't be back, but, you know, he underperformed. You saw guys like you saw guys at the bottom of the order. Jake Mariznick had a really rough offensive year.
Mm-hmm.
You saw
mm-hmm.
a lot of guys that were healthy just didn't perform and kind of underperformed expectations. And that can't happen if you want to contend for a World Series championship.
Is it true, Chandler? I heard that, I mean, the Astros were like an eyelash away from having Bryce Harper in the lineup last year?
Yeah, so that was a story that was actually reported by Ken Rosenthal at some point in the offseason that the Astros had agreed in principle at the trade deadline last year to acquire Bryce Harper. And Jeff Luhnow, actually pretty surprisingly, he was asked about it today, and Jeff Luhnow is a guy that is normally very coy with the media. He doesn't like to reveal a lot, and he doesn't, you know, speak openly about negotiations or anything. But, you know, he revealed that, yes, I mean, there was an agreement in principle for the Astros to acquire Bryce Harper for J.B. Bukal. Now, this is not – Jeff Luhnow did not say the prospects involved, but it's reported that the prospects involved in the trade were going to be J.B. Bukauskas, Garrett Stubbs, who is this team's third catcher now, and then maybe another low-level minor leaguer. So it would have been a lot to give up for, you know, a couple of months of Bryce Harper, because I'm not sure the Astros could have I'm not sure if they would have wanted to or they would have been feasible to sign him to an extension after that. But, yeah, it certainly is fun to think about, and it's certainly fun to play what if Bryce Harper was hitting third or fourth in that ALCS instead of an injured Carlos Correa or an injured Jose Altuve.
Wow, just the thought of that, something. All right, the marathon's about to begin, man. Always great catching up with you, man. I'm so happy for you. And are you enjoying the baseball gig?
Yeah, last year was my first full season. It was an eye-opener. You can say that you're on the road 120 nights a year and it's all fine and good, but until you actually live it, it's a little bit different. But I think I'm in some sort of a rhythm now, and you know, we're in it for the long haul here, spring training. I'm here for 39 more days, and then the season starts. So it's just kind of, like you said, we're running not even the first mile, just the first half a mile of a very long marathon, and it starts in West Palm.
Just do like we all do when we just use that expense account and use it to the limit and enjoy it, my friend. But let's catch up again soon, man. I greatly appreciate the time. And I can think of worse places to be than, you know, West Palm Beach, Florida. Seriously.
Oh, you're right. It's 80 degrees and not a cloud in the sky. It's beautiful. I can't complain.
Beautiful. Chandler Rome. Thank you, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Jordy.
All right. Take care. Chandler Rome with the Houston Chronicle. Play ball, here we go. We'll take a timeout. Much more to come. This is the Jordy Helpert Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helpert Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Time to talk about the NFL. It never slows down. It never stops. And a bombshell came out today. Let's get things caught up to speed with the Schwab, Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. Kind enough to join us. Frank, happy Valentine's Day, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, hasn't given any thought to inquiries by NFL owners about his willingness to switch leagues and become commissioner of the NFL. Man, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I guess by now we kind of know there's a few owners against Roger Goodell, that they're not, I guess, unanimously in support of him. So was this one or two owners going at Adam Silver and asking him? It wouldn't even matter, because A, Roger Goodell is under a contract, B, the other owners have to agree to this. So it's a very splashy headline. It's interesting mm-hmm. in some ways, but but those are kind of meaningless. Like, and even if Adam Silver was like, yeah, sure, I'll jump and be an NFL commissioner tomorrow, doesn't mean he would. Like, there's still a lot of steps that they have to go through. And, you know, I think it's pretty well put, you know, established by now that, you know, again, Roger Goodell's not unanimously, you know, beloved by all the owners. I think a lot of them do like Roger Goodell, though. I think a lot of them, in particular, really like the money that Roger Goodell has made them. If nothing, I mean, we can criticize Roger Goodell for a lot of different things. We can't criticize him for the financial success of the NFL. That you might not want to give him a ton of credit for. You might want to say that, you know, he's just kind of along for the ride and anybody can be commissioner. But we have to step back and say, look, the NFL is experiencing unprecedented financial growth. They're the most popular league in the history. The NFL 2018-19 is the most popular league in the history of sports, American sports, and Roger Goodell's commissioner for that. So when I look at this story, I say, yes, you know, maybe there are a few owners out there don't like Roger Goodell necessarily, did talk to Adam Silver about this. Maybe even those conversations are taken out of context, but I think by and large, the owners still like Roger Goodell because he makes him a ton of money.
I wonder, Roger Goodell has fallen on every sword that's been out there. The owners hide behind in their ivory tower, and there he is, falling on the sword. I wonder what he's feeling now, knowing that it's out there that some of the owners have gone behind his back and trying to get him out of there.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, you know, he's a smart dude. I mean, he probably does understand that not everybody loves him. I mean, if you've gone against, I mean, Jerry Jones, we all know that. I mean, let's not dance around that. Jerry Jones is kind of turned on Roger Goodell, and I don't know where their relationship stands at this second as we sit here on February 14th at, you know, 2:30 Mountain Time, but it's been out there that Jerry Jones and Roger Goodell have kind of been on the outs for a while. So he knows. And again, Roger Goodell is a smart guy. He's compensated incredibly well to do this job. And, you know, I think he's going to sleep just fine at night on his $44 million annual salary. So the thing about it, though, you know, I mean, when we talk about, you know, Adam Silver versus Roger Goodell, and you talk about Roger Goodell falling on swords and whatever, it just brings to mind that, you know, whatever we do think about Roger Goodell, he's perfect for what the owners want. The owners don't want an Adam Silver necessarily, who I think, as far as I know, I mean, I don't cover the NBA, but I watch it a lot and pay attention to news and all that. Adam Silver seems like the kind of guy who he's willing to shake things up. He's willing to tell the owners, this is the way we got to do things, guys. This is smart business. And I don't think NFL owners don't want that. I don't think they want anybody in that room to challenge them. That's why we see them make a lot of dumb mistakes, honestly. They just want to live in their bubble and pat each other on the back for what a good job they're doing and not be told, hey, let's leave this
Makes
issue
sense.
Alone. Let's handle this issue differently. Let's not make gambling the biggest villain in the world and embrace it. You know, I mean, stuff like that. I just don't think that they're ready for an Adam Silver. Like, even, let's say again, Adam Silver's like, yeah, sure, I'll be NFL commissioner tomorrow. It sounds fun. I don't know that there's a big faction of NFL owners who would want a commissioner who has strong opinions and who is kind of forward thinking about a lot of topics, including gambling. It's fun. It's an interesting story. It's a great headline, but I kind of look at this and say, the owners, I can't even imagine a guy like Adam Silver being NFL commissioner, to be honest with you.
I got you. The Schwab, Frank Schwab, editor for Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. It seems to me for the first time in, I don't know, quite a while, the NFL's quarterback supply seems to be outpacing the demand. I mean, you've got the Joe Flacco from the Ravens going to the Denver Broncos. You're there. You're there in Denver. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, and first of all, I agree with you, and we kind of touched on it last season where I said, I don't think the NFL's ever been in a better place with quarterbacks from top to bottom. Like, you know, we can argue about whether Andy Dalton's a great quarterback. Andy Dalton's a three-time Pro Bowler. I mean, if he's one of the worst quarterbacks in football, they're doing pretty well. And, you know, most teams have some kind of answer quarterback or are going to find it in Kyler Murray or Dwayne Haskins or whoever. With Denver, though, I mean, I don't get that. I don't, why is this a smart move? Like, Joe Flacco in his prime wasn't a great quarterback. Like, he had a great month.
No.
He had other great playoff games, and that was great for Joe Flacco. But if you look back, Joe Flacco was the starting quarterback for a contending team for 11 seasons and never made a Pro Bowl. You know how tough that is to do? Like, it's almost impossible not to stumble into one as like an injury replacement. He never did it. And so I looked and I say, why is Joe Flacco, 34 years old, who's really on a decline, why is he any better than Case Keenum? What possibly are you getting out of this? I think Elway's a little bit desperate here. I think that he must be feeling some kind of pressure. He's not a patient guy. And I just don't know. Like, yeah, Case Keenum wasn't great last year. You know what? Joe Flacco's not going to be great this year. It's just the latest guy to complain about in Denver. So I don't know. I found this trade to be just strange. Keep the draft pick. Don't pay this, you know, salary cap hit when you cut Case Keenum, which I think he's got a $10 million cap hit this year. So just keep Case Keenum around. Draft your guy for the future. Do this thing the right way. Keenum gives you another mediocre season, maybe a little bit better than that. And then you move ahead with Drew Lock or Daniel Jones or whoever, whichever rookie quarterback you're going to draft this year. I just don't see what Flacco does for them. I don't think he's any better than what they had.
I agree. And it just seems like, you know, so Flacco's got himself a gig, but I wonder what's going to happen. Is this a bad sign for Nick Foles? How about Teddy Bridgewater, the backup for the Saints? What's going to happen in Miami with Ryan Tannehill or Blake Bortles at Jacksonville? It just seems like there's a lot of quarterbacks out there. Maybe they aren't enough seats for them to sit down on.
It's a great point. I was starting to think, you know, it's funny. Earlier today, I was starting to write up some of our free agency preview stuff and was writing something on quarterbacks. And I was starting to think about Teddy, and I was thinking, where does he go? I mean, if Nick Foles goes to Jacksonville, which we all kind of think is going to happen, right? Let's just say Nick Foles goes to Jacksonville.
Okay.
Let's say the Miami Dolphins, everybody I read in the Miami media is saying the Dolphins want to tank this season. They want to get Tua next year. Who knows? Trevor Lawrence in 2 years. They don't seem to be a team that wants to win this year. Let's put it that way. And so, what team makes sense for Teddy Bridgewater? And I kind of come back to your background and backyard and say, maybe Teddy Bridgewater just re-signs with the Saints and kind of waits out Drew Brees. I mean, he kind of seemed okay with that plan, and that seemed to be an option for everybody involved. And now, especially after he struggled Week 17, I think that does loom large in my mind, at least. Maybe other NFL teams ignore that. Heck, an NFL team just ignored that Joe Flacco hasn't been good for 4 years. So I who knows? But I just look at Teddy Bridgewater as a guy who – we went bananas over 38 preseason passes. We basically thought he was, you know, if you look back at Twitter in August last year, we thought this was 1984 Joe Montana reincarnated. And he's played one significant game since he blew out his knee 3 seasons ago, and it wasn't good. It wasn't good at all. Saints fans probably watched Week 17, and they didn't have their full complement of starters. They didn't have a lot to play for, but Teddy didn't play well. And I wonder if an NFL team like a Miami, like a Jacksonville, looks and says, are we really going to pay this guy, you know, $80 million over 4 years to be our guy? Are we sure? Because he wasn't great when he was in Minnesota. I think we have the legend of Teddy Bridgewater has kind of grown since he's been out. We think of him, Teddy was 8 through 14 touchdowns his second season. And that's fine. But so to get back to your original point, I look at this free agency class, and wherever Nick Foles goes, I think he's kind of the number one guy at this point. He's taken that over from Teddy. And then Teddy, I just can't find a good fit for him. I keep thinking about it and thinking about possibilities, and I don't know where he goes unless Miami just says, hey, he's from here, he's a Miami kid, we trust him, we believe in him, we're going to pay him. But I don't get the sense that they want to do that. So I don't know. You're right that we have reached a point where I do think supply is outreaching demand a little bit here, because there's going to be some good quarterbacks who otherwise would get snapped up right away, who I think are going to have a real tough time finding the kind of contract and the kind of situation they want.
Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. Antonio Brown has demanded a trade. What's his value out there? I mean, he's a great receiver. There's no question about that. But there is baggage. He's getting up in age a little bit. What do you think is a fit for him? And who takes a flyer on him?
Yeah, especially because, I mean, the Steelers have already kind of put it out there. They're not trading him in the AFC. They're not trading him in the New England Patriots. Probably in a couple other teams on their list, they probably wouldn't trade him to. So now you've cut it down from 31 possible teams to, who knows, 20, 15. And, you know, I don't think Antonio Brown is doing himself any favors lately. I don't know. Maybe, again, NFL teams ignore a lot of things because they just see the positive. They want to see the positive. They want to talk themselves into something. And so maybe these teams don't care that this has just been a nonstop drama show for Antonio Brown the past couple months. And it's possible. But I also wonder if the smart teams are out there saying, all right, this guy's 31 years old. He wasn't the number one receiver on his team last year. I think everybody's ignored that. Go look at Juju Smith-Schuster's stats.
Yeah.
Go look at Antonio Brown's stats. Juju had more catches, more yards, and a higher average on fewer targets. Okay? So you wonder if he's slowing down a little bit. He's making a lot of money. He is definitely has some baggage with him. You are going to have to give up something in return. I still, to this moment, look, I know I'm probably wrong, but my mind keeps telling me that the Pittsburgh Steelers are not going to trade a Hall of Fame player just to take a $21 million cap hit. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me to have basically whatever that is, 12% of your cap or whatever, being eaten up to not have a Hall of Fame player on your roster. Like, I don't know. At the end of the day, nothing makes sense to me other than Antonio Brown coming back, unless some team just goes crazy, the 49ers or somebody offers, you know, multiple picks, including a first. Then, yeah, okay. Then you can justify it. But I don't know. I don't know who's going to be willing to make that investment in Antonio Brown for all the reasons we just mentioned.
Reports out there, Frank, that maybe the New York Knicks are willing to part ways with Odell Beckham Jr. That's a different scenario, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a guy who he's still well within his prime. Now, there's a lot of injury concerns with him. It always seems to be something nagging, hamstring, this or that. I don't think the Giants are moving in Odell Beckham anywhere, but this always comes up. It's just, I think it's partially just because of the market. I think if Odell Beckham played down there in New Orleans or in Arizona or Seattle or something, I don't think we'd ever hear about this kind of stuff. It's just, you know, why I don't think the Giants are a better team without Odell Beckham. And now he's got a huge contract, and it makes a trade a lot tougher. If somebody was going to go all in on a receiver trade, you go all in on Odell Beckham because he's finding 5 years younger than Antonio Brown. So, and the same kind of baggage. So, but I don't think Odell's going anywhere because he really, truly, in my mind, is a transcendent player when he's healthy. You just got to get him healthy.
Yeah. Last question. I'll let you get out of here on this one. Kyler Murray going to be a good NFL quarterback? Is he worth that first round pick? Maybe the first pick overall? What are your thoughts on the small yet elusive quarterback?
Yeah, and this is a tough one for me. Guys who I really respect have said, yeah, he's got the goods. He has every skill you want from an NFL quarterback. But maybe I'm just being stodgy right now. I don't like to do this, but there's never been a quarterback like him succeed in the NFL. There's never been a quarterback like him in the NFL. If we look back, there's only three guys in the history of the NFL for 5'10 or below who have, I think it's like 8,000 career yards. And two of them were played in the 50s. Then one was Eddie LeBaron, the old 49er. The only comp to this guy, the only comp to Kyler Murray is Doug Flutie, who was a solid quarterback, really didn't get his chance. We all know he had to play in USFL and in Canada. And then, so maybe it's not even Doug Flutie's fault. Maybe Doug Flutie would have been a phenomenal quarterback. But yet, if we just kind of dismiss Doug Flutie as being good, not great, there's never been a quarterback at 5'10 or shorter who succeeded in the NFL. It's just never happened. Maybe it's because nobody gets a shot. Maybe it's because we've just been closed-minded to guys like that through the years. But it is tough for me to wrap my head around. Kyler Murray is unlike any other quarterback we've ever seen before, and he's worth the first pick, and he's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler. Maybe. I mean, he's got skills. He's got definite talent, no question about that. And he fits what the NFL is morphing into, where teams do, you know, value the mobility of a quarterback more. If Kyler Murray came around 10 years ago, there's no chance he'd get drafted, I don't think. Just because the NFL teams weren't ready to have a quarterback like him. They just weren't ready to wrap their minds around it. Now, you know, with the way offenses are going, you get him with the right fit, the right scheme, a creative offensive mind who's willing to say, hey, yeah, you're 5'10", but you do A, B, and C so well that we're going to build an offense around that. Yeah, that could work. I could see it. He's a fascinating guy, though, because, again, if he succeeds, he's the first. He is the first 5'10 quarterback in the history of the NFL, basically, to be a great quarterback. I don't know. You're really risking – you are risking your entire legacy, your entire career on this guy if you draft him high. If you draft him top five, you're basically saying, yeah, I'm going to be the first guy to draft somebody like this. I'm going to do it in the top 10, top five, whatever, and it's going to work. And if it doesn't – it's one of those deals where we'll look back 5 years. If it doesn't work, we're all going to say, yeah, of course that didn't work. Why didn't you see that coming? And also, if it does work, we're going to say, yeah, of course we saw that coming. He was great in college. Why would – why'd you get caught up whether he was 5'10 or 5'11 or 6'5"? So he's just one of those guys. He's a fascinating, fascinating prospect.
I lied. One more. Kareem Hunt, Cleveland. Thoughts?
You know, I get so cynical with this stuff, and I just kind of, and we've talked about this, it's we all forget. Kareem Hunt, yeah, I mean, the people are going to rip the Browns for a while. When Kareem Hunt shows up for the first time to minicamp or whenever he has his first press conference, it'll be a big story and there'll be outrage.
Yeah.
I guarantee you in November, we're going to look up, if somebody reminds you, we're going to look up and say, oh, yeah, when was the last time anybody talked about Kareem Hunt's past? When's the last time anybody talked about Tyreek Hill's past? When's the last time anybody brought up Joe Mixon punching a student at Oklahoma? Like, I mean, forget about this stuff. And I think the Browns, we don't give them enough credit here to say they understand exactly what's coming. If this goes basically along the same blueprint of every other case like this that we've seen, it's going to go like this. They're going to have to deal with a little bit of criticism right now. They're going to have to deal with a little bit of criticism in the offseason. Maybe a little bit more when the season starts. Maybe a little bit more in Kareem Hunt's first game. But then after a while, everybody's just going to kind of move on and say, oh, wow, Kareem Hunt had, you know, the 1,200 yards this year. What a great player. Yeah. Like we've done with Tyreek Hill. Go back and look at what Tyreek Hill did in college, and we've just forgotten about that. So I just think that honestly we judge teams based on wins and losses and nothing else. We do not say – I've never heard an NFL team say, well, yeah, this coach is under 500, but he brought a lot of really good guys into the locker room, and we value character, so he's going to keep his job. We all judge these guys just based on wins and losses. And John Dorsey saying, I have a really unique opportunity to add that the guy who led the NFL in rushing as a rookie, do it for $1 million. He's still 24 years old. I'll live with a little bit of criticism we're going to get because I know that's going to die down. Like, that's a very cynical answer I just gave you, but I've covered this league a long time, and that's just how it goes.
That's why we love having you. Frank Schwab, the editor of Shutdown Corner for Yahoo Sports. You're the best, buddy. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your week.
Absolutely, no doubt.
All right. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Hey, this is Sheamus.
I'm Cesaro.
And you're listening to 103.7 The Game.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
Oh, what a fun show it's been. Brody Miller talking LSU baseball, Chandler Rome with the Astros, and Frank Hughes with the NFL. Let's get right to it. Daily history lesson. It was on this day, February 14th, the year 1988. Bobby Allison became the oldest driver at 50 years old to win the Daytona 500. And in doing so, he beat his son, Davey Allison, for the trophy and the milk that followed thereafter at the Daytona 500. On this day, February 14th, the year 1988. If your birthday is today, Valentine's Day, well, happy birthday. Hope you get some chocolate, and if you're a female, hope you get some flowers or whatever it may be. And all of us here at 103.7 The Game and Delta Media wish you the happiest of days. You share with the likes of NFL wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey. Had a rough go in the playoffs, right? He'll never forget his dropped pass. Ugh. Anyway, Alshon Jeffrey, 28 years old today. Tomorrow, a very special baseball edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show. We'll have both head coaches, Paul Maneri of the LSU Tigers, Tony Robichaux of the UL Raging Cajuns. We'll have them on the show and much, much more. Plus a preview of LSU Georgia in hoops. CD, job well done as always. I hope everybody has a very safe and happy Valentine's evening. Hope you come back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m. Same great station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. Any questions, email me, askjordy@gmail.com. We're brought to you in part by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything for your travel needs and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Is it some kind of good? DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. On behalf of everyone here at 103.7 The Game, have a great afternoon. Have an even better evening. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.